Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1996 Brian De Palma classic, Mission Impossible. Now, clear your mind, close your eyes, unless you're driving, and imagine, if you will, a film that has an opening title sequence that shows you scenes from the movie you're about to see. That's what kind of stuff we're dealing with tonight. Granted, Ghost Protocol is way worse.
I don't know about that.
But... well, we'll talk about that in several weeks when we talk about Mission Impossible 4 Ghost Protocol. But today... Mission Impossible. Now, whose list is this on? I know we wanted to tackle this as a series. Who remembers loving this movie when they saw it the first time?
I saw it in the movie theater and really enjoyed it.
I think we saw it in the movie theater together, did we not?
It's possible. So, Drew, you remember seeing it and liked it when you saw it?
Oh, absolutely. This is a great movie.
Do either of you have any history with the TV series?
Yes. I watched the TV series. It was obviously in rerun / syndication, late night TV. I watched it constantly. I'm quite fond of Peter Graves, and I don't think he spoke well of this movie.
Yeah. I had seen it a few times on our little black and white TV, but I was more of a Black Sheep Squadron guy than a Mission Impossible guy.
Yeah, I've definitely seen a lot more Black Sheep Squadron than Mission Impossible. Jason had the TV in his room first. I had like the stereo equipment in my room, but not the TV until much later. So I didn't get as much of that late night stuff. Certainly all the Carson stuff. I was listening to Herb Chainlin on the radio instead. So I didn't see a lot of the Mission Impossible series, so I wasn't really beholden to the characters. Like Jim Phelps, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, other people were. And so this movie caused a little bit of an issue. When you saw it, Jason, were you offended?
It took me a while to figure out exactly what made me unhappy with the movie. And then it wasn't till the movie ended that I really realized the kind of bait and switch that I had experienced. And the sense of kind of betrayal I got from the people who decided they were going to shit on the franchise.
Was the film much different than the franchise? If you just skip the important characters.
Yes. Because it was episodic TV.
It wasn't serialized at all, right? It was just story of the week.
Pretty much.
And it wasn't as action-packed. It was more they get in and get out without even being...
It was more... spycraft and espionage than it was like murder, death, kill. And there weren't like splodies and stuff like that. It was much lower stakes. And there wasn't the crazy action scenes. And it was more cerebral. That's probably too generous. But it was definitely more of a kind of craft movie, spycraft and skillcraft, than it was brute and force and everybody against, you know, the world against one guy kind of thing.
I always imagined it like a cross between like the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and the A-Team.
Yeah, I would say it was like because it was James Bondy and it always had gadgets. So it had kind of that James Bond flair a little bit.
Did it have a little wink? Was it like sort of tongue-in-cheek a little bit?
It was campy.
Okay. I mean, I know it wasn't a comedy like Get Smart, but all of the masks and the tape recorders that would catch on fire.
Yeah.
You know, a little over the top. So this had some of that, for sure. Jason, do you remember liking it? I know I sort of painted you into a corner in the beginning, but...
I remember thinking it was okay, but again, I think that the ending really rubbed me the wrong way. And again, at the time I watched it, I wasn't sure why. And then after a little bit, I was able to put together why exactly. It really kind of felt, I don't know, it felt like a twisted fairy tale kind of, in a way that it had changed the universe that I had known, and not for the better. So,
and what did you think of it this time?
It was okay. It was fine. I had divorced myself of it being similar to the show. So it was fine this time. It's not the greatest thing I've seen. It's not the worst thing I've seen. So, I mean, it was fairly middling.
Drew, what did you think of it this time?
I quite enjoyed it. I think it holds up really well. It's hard to put in context today just how crazy the beginning was. Like, very famous actors who you think are going to play major roles in this movie do not. And that was very surprising back in the mid-90s when this came out. It's hard to keep that same sense now when that type of thing is done more often. But yeah, I thought it was great. Tom Cruise looks so young in this movie.
No, he was.
That part was a little distracting.
Well, John Voight looked relatively young too.
Sort of. I honestly think John Voight was the worst part of this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He was pretty rough. But I enjoyed the spycraft. I liked the story. I mean, it has iconic heist moments. I thought everybody did a great job. I love Max. She was great.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, the plot is silly. I think the sequel is probably the silliest, but this is the second silliest movie of the series. What really struck me this time is how stylized it was shot. Like, I never noticed before, but the scene between Ethan and Kittredge in the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
That's shot almost like a horror movie. You got the, like, really, really slow close-ups on them from, like, looking up at them.
Yeah.
And you can't really see around them. It gets really claustrophobic. Like, that is a great scene.
Yeah, that whole area in Prague, that was actually shot in Prague in a way that they, and it was, you know, basically this is just after the Cold War kind of opened up Eastern Europe to a different level, I guess, of filmmaking. And so that the scene with the bridge, they actually lit it in such a way as locals came to take pictures of their own skyline in a way that they had never seen it before, which is pretty impressive. Funny. Yeah.
Did you recognize Max's assistant?
I don't remember. No.
He was Liette, Dr. Kynes from the Dune series. Chaney's father.
Ah.
When I heard his voice, I was like, oh my God, can it? And then I had to go back and remember, this movie is old. So
yeah, true.
Yeah,
it was a little surprising to me.
Shall we dive into the plot?
Probably should.
Okay. It's
pretty thin.
It is. There's a lot of stuff going on, but yeah, it's... this movie really is a lot of action set pieces. So, unfortunately, I think watching it now, for me, it just reminded me of all those other movies. Like, just the fact that they were going after a knock list. I'm like, didn't we just do this? I was like, yeah, Jason Bourne did that. It's a familiar trope. I'm like, oh. So anyway, so we start out with Ethan Hunt, played by Tom Cruise, who we know from everything. He's an agent.
I thought we started out. Oh, no, you're right.
He's an agent. Well, again, I'm reading for the plot synopsis on IMDb, so if it skips around, I apologize. But he is an agent and point man for an Impossible Missions Force, IMF team. An unofficial branch of the CIA, led by Jim Phelps, John Voight, who we know from Heat, and 2004's Manchurian Candidate. In Kiev, the team is working on a mission. A disguised hunt is interrogating a Russian agent who has been tricked into believing he murdered fellow IMF agent Claire Phelps, Emmanuel Baert, Jim Phelps' wife. Claire has been given a drug to make her appear dead, but her team doesn't have much longer before Claire will be beyond reviving. The Russian finally gives up the name they're looking for and is taken away after the name checks out. Claire is revived, asking if the ruse was successful. Ethan assures her it was.
So I think the first recognizable face, the one who really opens up this movie, is Emilio Estevez, right?
Yes. As Jack, who is uncredited in this movie.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't need a credit. He was probably the second most famous person in this movie at the time.
Absolutely, yes.
Mr. Stabby.
He opens the movie. I mean, you've got Tom Cruise in some ridiculous makeup, so you don't really recognize him.
And this is actually one of the last times Emilio Estevez was in a major motion picture. He went off to direct and stuff after this.
You know what my favorite Emilio Estevez movie is?
Men at Work?
Oh, no.
Young Guns 3?
No.
There's no Young Guns 3. Come on.
Sorry.
The Way.
Oh, that's on our list. I've never seen it.
Never heard of it.
When you watch it, you will laugh now that I said that.
That's a Martin Sheen movie too, right?
Yes. Emilio Estevez plays Martin Sheen's son in the movie.
It's a stretch.
Yeah, I'll ride or die for a stakeout.
Oh yeah, stakeout, absolutely.
God.
Emilio Estevez has, I mean, you know, he was in The Breakfast Club, right? He had a bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah.
He was arguably the better Sheen brother. I mean, still is, but, you know.
I mean, I don't know how you define better. I don't think he had tiger blood.
No, that's true. Absolutely not. Yeah, Charlie never got super chubby. I mean, like a real person. He survived on cocaine and hookers and AIDS to keep him thin. Anyway, so while in flight, Jim Phelps is given a tape containing a covert mission for his team. The team assembles in Prague in a safe house to prevent an Eastern European diplomat, a Gullitson, from stealing a non-official cover list, the Knock List, a comprehensive list of all covert agents in Eastern Europe. They go over every detail of the plan and the equipment they will be using. The mission runs smoothly, everyone achieves their mission goals, and the team obtains video evidence of Gullitson stealing the Knock List and exiting the building.
I have to say, I love scenes like that. I love preparing for the heist scenes almost as much as I love the heist scenes. Maybe sometimes more.
You're in it for the briefcases, right?
I love it. I love it all. Step one.
Yes.
I love it. And it's done very well in this movie, the way they set it. Very stylized, how they kind of cut back and forth between the planning and the initial parts of the missions.
This is a stylishly shot movie. Brian De Palma makes good movies.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's when everything goes inextricably wrong. Over the radio frequency, Ethan hears his teammate Jack, Emilio Estevez, dying from getting impaled on a spike after losing control of the elevator he had been riding all night, which also happens to be the one Gullitson used to escape. His other teammates, Hannah Williams and Claire, are killed when their car is bombed with them inside.
Yeah, I don't even know, why do they even have murder spikes in elevator shafts?
It just seems like a bad idea, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really dangerous.
Well, again, Eastern Europe, you never know. Jim Phelps is also killed by an unseen assassin that he had reported was following him on the Charles Bridge. Sarah, Kristen Scott Thomas, follows Ethan's orders to pursue Gullitson, but finds him being stabbed to death. The assassin grabs her and kills her as well. Ethan arrives too late, only to find them both dead and realizing that the disc Gullitson has used is gone. Fleeing the scene, Hunt stops at a payphone to call his agency and alert them of the tragic outcome of their mission. Eugene Kitteridge, Henry Zierney, the CIA-based director of IMF, tells Ethan to meet him at a local cafe. Ethan is surprised to find that Kittredge is in Prague, too. An hour later, Ethan, very much in shock from the previous events, meets Kittredge, but realizes they are not alone. So they got this restaurant that has all these fish tanks.
The restaurant is called Aquarium.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, there you go.
Yes. Aquarium.
So, yeah, it is super stylish. And they have this great, you know, you're right. It's actually masterfully shot. It's got good dialogue. I mean, it's got sort of a dumb, what do they call it? Red light, green light gum.
the magic exploding gum. Yeah.
Yes. Hasta lasagna.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You have like really, really intense Tom Cruise, which is always compelling.
I understand you're very upset right now. No? Nothing? All right.
I thought you were setting that up for Jason.
I was. Jason is not taking the bait. So, they have this conversation and learns that this whole thing is a mole hunt. There's a mole within IMF. And there's another IMF team that's surrounding them. And then Hunt sees the mole and is asking Kittredge about it. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And so they find out that the whole thing was an operation to flush out the mole. They were going to allow him to acquire the list and attempt to sell it to Max, an illegal arms dealer known for corrupting IMF agents. So the knock list found in Prague was a fake. The real list is being held at the CIA headquarters in Virginia. And now Hunt, he's the only survivor, so Kittredge assumes he's the mole. So all of a sudden, Ethan is a man without a country. But he's got a piece of gum that'll get him out of any jam.
That's all you really need.
Pretty much. And he blows up a huge fish tank. And then flees into Prague's Old Town Square. And again, that scene is pretty great. So then he returns to a safe house and he uses the internet to seek out Max. Now granted, this is 1996, so the internet is not what it is now. Apparently, in the European release of this movie, instead of typing into like Usenet, he was typing into CruiseNet.
Nice.
Psh, yeah.
That's the only thing that really took me out of this movie is the technology is kind of laughably dated. Got your 3.5-inch floppy disk. You've got using the internet in ways that the internet actually doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious now that the best thing you can do is not show any screens and just be like, doot-doot-doot-doot, I've got the answer to the question from the computer.
Right.
I mean, kind of like in Minority Report.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't get to see it in all the different languages.
Yeah, there's that.
That's true.
So we have all the Bible websites to find out who Job is, blah, blah, blah. And he falls asleep, wakes up to the sound of footsteps in the lobby, an intruder entering the safe house. And he thinks it's Jim, bloody and dying. But it turns out to be Claire, still alive and having survived the mission. She reveals that she wasn't in the car when it exploded. He tells her about the mole operation, how he's been disavowed by the agency, and that he needs to contact Max to seek out the mole called Job. So Ethan receives a reply to one of his emails telling him to go to a specific intersection in Prague. He's taken to a meeting with Max, finding out that she's actually a woman, Vanessa Redgrave, who we have seen in no movies we've talked about. And yet, she was listed, we talked about her as being one of the best living actresses. So, go figure. So, Ethan tells her that the disc she received from Job is a fake and likely has a tracking device on it that will activate as soon as she tries to read the disc, allowing the IMF to find them. Ethan's hunch is correct, and they flee the apartment, narrowly escaping Kittredge and his team. Ethan then offers to retrieve the real knock list for Max in exchange for a cash advance and arranging a meeting with Job, so Max agrees to that deal. Ethan uses Max's money to assemble a team of blacklisted or disavowed intelligence agents, including computer expert Luther Stickle, played by Ving Rhames, who we know from Dave and Out of Sight, and pilot Franz Krieger, played by Jean Reno, from 1998's Godzilla, among other things.
And Max totally wants to jump Hunt's bones the entire movie, right?
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't really?
That's fun.
Yeah. So, disguised as a team of firefighters. Again, all these things remind me of other movies. They infiltrate the heavily fortified quarters of the CIA in Langley, Virginia, under the pretense of a fire alarm created by Luther. They neutralize a security guard, and Ethan is lowered into the highly secured chamber housing the only computer terminal holding the knock list. Now, this is a scene that is iconic. It is a, not by now, it is a classic movie scene. It has been copied and parodied and just done over and over and over again, referred to. It's almost a trope now.
It's iconic.
Yeah, and yet it's pretty great.
It's referenced in, I think, every other Mission Impossible movie,
right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
There's a scene where Ethan falls and is caught right before he hits.
But even just his dangling, like the way he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cruise does a mean dangle. Anyway, good stuff. I mean, I have to approve of that. It's great.
Yeah, the whole vault, I mean, the vault itself doesn't make any sense, but it looks so cool. The floor that changes color based on whether it's secured or not. It was great. The whole thing was great.
It's nice. It has some points of tension. It's great, yeah. So anyway, they get the list and they retreat to a London hotel.
Did the audio meter remind you of, and the temperature sensor remind you of sneakers?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. So Hunt accidentally finds out that the Bible he took in Prague belongs to the Chicago's Drake Hotel, where Phelps claimed to have stayed for a recruitment session. After seeing on the news that his uncle and mother had been falsely arrested for drug trafficking and attempt to lure him out, Hunt is infuriated and contacts Kitteridge, who offers to drop the fake charges the moment Hunt surrenders himself to authorities. Hunt hangs up the phone after allowing Kitteridge to trace him to the London area. Turns around and walks right into Jim Phelps. Dun, dun, dun. Phelps, looking very ill, reveals that Kitteridge was the one who tried to kill him, that he is the mole, and that he is trying to tie up loose ends by trying to apprehend Hunt. By the way, all this also in Jason Bourne.
Yeah. What I appreciate about this movie, and another nice touch, another nice stylized touch, is while Phelps is kind of spinning his yarn about Kitteridge, the visuals are Ethan figuring out that it was actually Phelps. I think a lesser movie would have waited for that reveal until the very end as like a twist.
Yeah. Well, also, the Jason Bourne movies tried to do sort of the same thing, you know, using the memory thing, having him recover his memories little by little, but not in an as efficient way. I mean, I think the Jason Bourne movies are kind of they're just as stylistic, I suppose. But in some ways, especially in the plot ways, they're kind of a weak copy of this.
Oh, read the books.
Again, I don't want, like, I like this movie. This movie is very stylish. But this, I think I mentioned, I think this may have been the weakest movie of the series, although Drew reminds me that maybe the next movie is the weakest of the series.
I don't know that I've seen any of them but this one.
I mean, the plots don't get any better, but the action scenes continue to improve and are very, like, all the action set pieces are pretty impressive. Because Tom Cruise, this is where he began his insistence, and he was a producer of this movie, his insistence that he did most of his own stunts.
Yeah, and he is such a nutcase that, it's easy to believe the shit he does for these movies. I mean, I believe he even learned close-up magic so that he could do the scene with the disc.
Oh, it was him. Yeah. Yeah. He did the sleight of hand thing. And he's the one that said they needed to get the biggest fans possible for when they did the top of the train fight in the end of the movie. They had fans that could produce 140 mile an hour winds. That could ripple his face as he's standing on top of a train. Again, attention to detail. This is a very expensive movie to make, too. But it made its money back. We don't have to worry about them. They're doing fine. So anyway, he's remembering that Krieger uses the same kind of knife that was used to kill both Gottlieb and Sarah. And he's not so clear about Claire's involvement in the conspiracy. Ethan pretends to buy Jim's story. And keeps her meeting a secret from everyone else.
I had the briefest of moments when they were on the train, where I was having this dissonance, where I thought he's going to walk in dressed up as some priesty guy, and there's going to be some woman in a Swedish outfit, and
yes,
trading places.
Yeah, and we have Dan Aykroyd in blackface.
Yeah, because it was that whole, oh, there's going to be a gorilla in the train compartment, and then I had to remember that I was misremembering vastly and drastically.
I had the same sort of experience, except that I thought that it would be Jake Gyllenhaal who would get onto the train, and then things would happen, and he'd be like, oh, hold on, and then have to do the whole thing over again.
Oh, God. Then they would be in this garage, and then they would be back in the future, and again, yes. And again, uh-huh. And again, and again, and again.
Yep. And then Emily Blunt would do some kind of crazy kicks and stuff, and yeah.
Oh, you brought it back to Tom Cruise. Nicely done.
Yeah, all these things merged together. It's been a long week.
You're like getting fucking old.
Yeah, we are. So the next day, Max and Ethan arranged to meet aboard the high-speed TGV train en route from London to Paris, with Claire and Luther aboard to provide backup. Kittredge is also aboard, having recently arrived in London and receiving tickets for the TGV and a video watch from Hunt. In the train, Ethan delivers the knock list to Max, who directs him to the luggage compartment to find his money and Job. Max then attempts to transmit the knock list to a remote server, an operation hindered by Luther, who keeps jamming the signal. Claire, observing Kitteridge's presence aboard the train, vacates her seat and meets with Phelps in the luggage car, confirming that she really is part of the conspiracy. A silent Jim slowly peels away his mask, revealing himself as Ethan. Suddenly, the real Phelps appears. By the way, I hate the masks. I hate the whole idea of the masks. I don't like the whole Scooby-Doo aspect of it. Yeah, it's gross, but it's also dumb. Zoinks. So the real Phelps appears, armed.
they have to do the masks, yes, as an homage to the TV series, yeah, right?
No, it's a total fan service, absolutely. And the masks were dumb in the TV series, too. But again, that's part of the aesthetic. So... Phelps appears, demands the money, he demands the knock list money. Ethan surrenders the money before pulling out a pair of glasses. He slides them over his eyes, activating the camera inside and transmitting Phelps' image to Kittredge, proving beyond a doubt that Phelps is alive and outing him as the mole IMF is looking for. So Phelps, now revealed as a traitor, shoots Claire in anger when she speaks against killing Ethan. He then subdues Ethan before escaping to the roof of the train where Krieger...
Wait. I don't think he shoots her out of anger. I think he shoots her out of scuffle.
Okay.
Am I misremembering? There was a struggle in the compartment and she didn't want him to shoot Ethan. I don't think he was like angrily shooting her.
No, I think he did shoot her on purpose. Whether or not it was a distraction or
means to end,
but I mean he took a real dark turn. He became a mustache twirling villain right at the end.
Yes,
agree.
He hurled some pretty offensive lines at his wife there at the very end. Not okay. Not okay, Jim Phelps.
Well, and Krieger, who we know is a bad guy because we had already seen that he was fell in love with a 13-year-old girl in a related movie. He is trying to rescue or extract Phelps with a helicopter. So, blah, blah, blah. A really action-packed fight scene on the train, the top of the train, in the channel tunnel. And the helicopter is following the train outside of the tunnel, blah, blah, blah. Ethan impedes his effort to escape and tethers the helicopter to the train as it heads into the tunnel. So Phelps manages to disconnect this tethering and attempts to escape, but Ethan follows, leaping onto the helicopter's landing skids and attaching the red light, green light gum to the windshield. So helicopter crashes, kills Phelps, kills Krieger. Ethan survives. Kittredge is satisfied that the mole's been neutralized. The knock list has been retrieved, and now He's holding Max's true identity. He reinstates Luther as an IMF agent and drops his investigation against Ethan, who is supposedly resigned from IMF.
I mean, we yada-yadded a little bit about how cool that last action set piece was.
Oh, it is very cool. I mean
the helicopter in the tunnel was pretty badass.
Yes.
Ethan blowing himself up to be propelled back to the moving train was pretty amazing. I mean, especially for 1996, that was some great action.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, again, you have to suspend disbelief, but that's okay. And he gets to use the gum twice.
The helicopter blade nearly stopping it slicing him as it's been shaved into a razor sharp knife point.
Well, there's that.
That felt like the...
scissors.
The end of a very campy television episode.
Scissors, scissors, scissors.
But in the final scene, Ethan flies home. A flight attendant approaches him through a coded phrase and offers him a new mission. Dun, 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 dun.
Bruno!
And by the way, who did the music for this?
Half of U2.
Yes. And you know what? Actually, a quarter of U2
did
a bunch of songs, and then another quarter of U2 did another bunch of songs. Like, they didn't even work together.
They did on the theme song, right?
Well, maybe they collaborated at a distance, though, because I think I read that they actually recorded them in separate locations. I could be wrong. But yeah, it was Larry Mullen and The Edge.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird time in the mid-90s when people in U2 started doing movie soundtracks. Like, I remember Bono did In the Name of the Father, right?
Yeah, well, and then Batman, right?
They did Batman?
Wasn't the, oh no, wait, hold on. They did Batman. They did Spider-Man, the Spider-Man musical. Sorry, I'm getting my time.
Oh no, they did what? Hold Me, Thrill Me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 That was in the Batman movie, right? In a Batman movie.
Yeah, one of the Batman movies. Yeah.
Overshadowed by, of course, Kiss from a Rose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, so any other notes about, I mean, I know we yada yada a lot, but it's an action movie. So, you know, that kind of comes with the territory. And I think, at least in just speaking only for myself, I'm going to try to end up comparing the rest of these movies to each other as much as possible. Because otherwise I get so... Because, again, watching this, I was like, oh, this is just like this movie and that's just like that movie. But I had to go back and figure out that this was before a lot of those other movies. I mean, this was actually...
Yeah.
It wasn't like cutting edge necessarily, but... You know, stuff like him with his crazy dangling suit, that was all brand new and stylish. And certainly the train and the helicopter stuff was pretty great looking. Even now. It looks great even now, mm-hmm. Although again, scissors, of course. So, anyway, I'm sorry. I asked a question that I did not let you guys answer. A hallmark of the program. Any notes, Jason?
Nope.
Nope?
Nope.
Drew, any notes?
No, this movie is good. It's fun to watch still. Ving Rhames is delightful. He's great.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is always compelling. You know, John Voight died, so that was good.
Emilio Estevez is great.
For 10 minutes.
Yeah. Like you said, Asa Lasagna. I don't think anybody else could pull off that line.
No, no. Vanessa Redgrave, also great.
She was low-key MVP in this movie, Vanessa Redgrave. She was fantastic.
So, Brother Jay, your verdict?
This is, after all the years, it's a good action movie. It kept the pace. It kept me interested, even though I've seen it before, and none of it was a surprise. So, but I would still give this movie an A. It holds up decently. It didn't rely on stupid special effects, so it has aged well. It has a certain patina, if you will. So, I don't know. I thought it was good.
Drew, was it worth it?
Of course it was worth it. I mean, much like another iconic first entry in a movie series, The Fast and the Furious, it's not breaking a lot of new ground, but what it's doing, it does really well. And it sets an interesting tone for the rest of the series to either follow or make a calculated departure from.
Okay, so this brings me to a question I have about Fast and the Furious. So Hobbs and Shaw is coming out. Well, hold on. Hobbs and Shaw is coming out. Mm-hmm. My question is, since we've already done one Fast and Furious movie.
Should we do them all? Is that your question?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So at some point, we'll start with one and fill in the blanks.
Wait, was that really your question?
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking, should we watch one? But no, you want to watch them all. Okay, cool. See? I've only seen a couple of them. So
I get a month off, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I think maybe in and amongst stuff, maybe, yeah.
I guess those could be Eric and Drew episodes if you really want.
Yeah, for the next several months.
I'll have to make boyfriend Jesse come and talk about them.
Yeah, there we go. So, are we on to housekeeping?
Sure.
We
housekeeping.
Wait, really? did you get a full opportunity to state your opinion on the movie?
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much agree with you guys. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Again, the only thing that really irritated me, I mean, the mask thing is dumb, but it's okay. What really irritated me was I could not believe the opening sequence showed scenes from the movie I was about to watch.
But that's a pullback from the show.
Maybe it actually is reflected in a lot of the movies, but the worst is Ghost Protocol. And we will talk about it. Yeah, but not to jump ahead. No, I enjoyed it. That was great. So in housekeeping, I don't know how much we talked about my daughter's situation last week. We talked some about it, but her oral surgery was pushed back to late December. So it's been kind of confusing because it changes all of our plans a little bit. But other than that, that's been pretty much my life, that and work being kind of busy. I get to sleep in my own bed again, which is nice. We got a bed frame for Journey so she can now sleep closer to the floor because she's still got a cast on her leg and can't climb a ladder.
Yay, golf clap for your own bed.
Oh, it's the best. So, yeah. So, Brother Jay, housekeeping?
Boyfriend Jesse and I last weekend were actual normal, quote-unquote, adults and went to dinner and a movie on Friday night.
I can't wait to hear about this.
So we went and we actually went to a movie. We went to an IMAX theater across the river. There is a IMAX theater probably slightly closer to my house, but it's in a part of town where I'm like not wild about going and trying to find parking and leaving my car and then having to walk and all that. So it's like we just drove out to Vancouver, also known as Vantucky or New Vansterdam. So we went to dinner and then saw IMAX, the Terminator Dark Fate. Opening night, the 7 o'clock show, and it was virtually empty.
Wow, that's surprising.
There was maybe 30 people in the theater. Maybe.
Wow. And it's a big theater?
Yes.
Because it's an IMAX?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And
so there's.
And you are something of a Terminator expert, having watched all of the movies and the series.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much of an expert I am. I would say I'm clearly just slightly elevated from the average fan. I do enjoy this story. There's some missteps, obviously. Salvation was not my favorite movie, and Genesis had some definitive issues. But this movie very much, which, again, I'm not charting any original ground here, but this movie is very much the direct sequel to the second movie. So it really kind of picks up in a way where the second movie left off.
It's getting pretty decent reviews, actually. It's bombing, like you said, but it's getting pretty decent reviews.
It tanked, though, domestically. It'll make money back, but just barely internationally. But it tanked. Like, it cost, I think, $130 million to make, and made so far has made maybe $30 million, maybe
domestically.
Yeah. So that's surprising. Also, this is the first in a trilogy of movies, which the trilogy might not happen now. The studio has already well, rumor has it, the studio has already shopped the remaining two movies to possibly spin them to Netflix to make a series out of instead, which I think actually may be a better service to the series, but they won't have that Cameron stupid overreaching, just too much.
Just make the next season of the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, I would watch that in a heartbeat.
I think all those actors are available.
So the movie itself, the first third of it and the last third of it were like really, really awesome action. The middle third of it was slow and it was master exposition for the sake of, I think, people who have never seen the movies. But it wasn't necessary for people who haven't seen the movies. And for people who have seen the movies, it was just annoying speed bumps to get to really what we wanted to see. It was great to see Linda Hamilton. It was interesting to see Arnold Schwarzenegger.
How were the younger actors? How did they do?
They were good.
So it was two. It was the we had plot problems, pace problems, and you said it was like too stylized.
They didn't have plot problems. It was a story problem. The plot was fine, but they just put too much into the thinky part of the movie that shouldn't be a thinky movie. It's like it's not going to be a cerebral movie.
Okay.
You're already skirting the whole time travel paradox business. You don't need to be any more brilliant than that because you're just not going to succeed.
Would it be spoiling to tell us if John Connor makes an appearance in the movie?
It's not a spoiler. No, he does not make an appearance.
By the way, you know who's making an appearance on the podcast lately?
Bruno.
He's made a lot of appearances lately.
Sorry.
No,
this is very much, it was very clear in the first probably 20 minutes of this movie that the protagonist is meant to be the new hero and the new star of the next three movies. That's the impression I got. Girl? No.
It's the kid.
The Latina. It was clear from the beginning that she's meant to be the star in the next three movies. And you see her develop throughout the movie. So there is a progression. And she does a really good job of going from incredulous to indestructible. So, there's going to be some interesting future if there is another movie made.
So you're still intrigued by how the series is going?
Well, it's a new story. This is a new story. So, although it's using elements that they've established from the past, the story is new. It's a new story.
So it's like a sequel to two, you said.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So I think the pretense is that nothing after two has occurred.
That seems like a good good as in place.
Again, because it's the whole time travel paradox by going back.
Well, that's kind of what Sarah Connor Chronicles did too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So going back from the future changes the future, so the future is different. You know, because some of the plot is Skynet never happened because it got changed. But there's something else, of course. And so there's these changes in the universe.
Is Shirley Manson in it? That's what I want to know.
No.
That's too bad. Only help.
No. Yeah, no. Arnold and Linda were the only ones that came. Well, Edward Furlong he was in it.
Cool. Good for him. Someone needs to throw him a bone, you know. He's had some rough times. Yeah, he's had a rough life, I think. He's had some addiction issues, I think. I don't know. Again, I like the underdog story. So, how was dinner? We can yada out of the movie. Tell us how the lobster bisque was.
The lobster bisque?
It's a yada yada reference, actually. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't get it. But we went to dinner first. It was okay. We waited too long to get dinner. We waited too long. The restaurant was like interminably slow. And then I got snappy with the waitress because she was like being all chatty and slow. And I said, no, we're ready to order. We have a movie that we need to see. So we're kind of on a time crunch. And she says, oh, and then she continues talking. And I was like, no, we know what we want to order. We have a time crunch. We got to go. You know, we have to be at a movie theater at such and such a time. And anyway.
Did you have to rush through dinner?
It was an abbreviated dinner. We didn't get appetizers. It was fine. It was just one of those things where it's like, eh. But then of course we rushed to the movie theater, which was stupid because then we had like 25 minutes of previews. So there was no point. And we had assigned seats. So all of the rushing was for naught. Yeah. But,
well,
and of course it's weird to be away from home super late at night and having to drive home. And I'm like, oh man, I am getting old. So,
well, yeah, actually, this is the part of the year I hate in Alaska because there's not snow on the ground yet and it is dark because, you know, all of our streetlights and stuff are all based on snow being in the ground or they being light 24 hours a day. So we don't have a lot of streetlights and stuff or reflectors on the roads or anything. It's just super dark.
But other than that, Halloween went smoothly. We had maybe 50 trick-or-treaters. So that's a downturn for us. Derek's leaving for Mexico tomorrow for 5 days.
Where?
I don't know. He's just staying at a resort somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
However, I took today off of work. Unrelated. I needed a day off, but unrelated. I got to spend most of the morning with him at the DMV because he had to get a new driver's license because he realized that his has been expired for 2 years and they made him take a driving test.
Oh, wow.
So I had to drive him to the DMV so he could use my vehicle to take a driving test. So
I assume he passed okay?
Yeah, he passed fine.
That's funny.
The driving instructor also was very happy with the very comfortable vehicle that Derek got to take a test in. So,
as long as he's not going to a place in Mexico that's home to a former polygamist fundamentalist Latter-day Saints group, he's fine.
Are you trying to make a Jim Jones reference?
No. In 2 days ago, I think a convoy, sort of, not really a convoy necessarily, but three big SUVs.
When you say convoy, you know the only thing that hits my mind
is
the song.
Yeah. No, it was actually three big SUVs. There was three Mormon mothers and like 14 kids or something were traveling from northern Mexico, a northern Mexico town founded 100 years ago by a offshoot polygamous Mormon sect. We're driving, a couple of them were driving to some place to get something, and the one of them was supposed to go pick up somebody from the airport in Phoenix. But they got ambushed by probably drug cartel people, and they killed all three mothers, I think, burned the cars, bunch of kids were killed. One 13-year-old hid some of his younger siblings in the bushes and walked like 23 kilometers to go get help. Very tragic. Then they arrested somebody that they said, oh, this is the guy. We found him. And, oh, yeah, he had two hostages with him, blah, blah, blah. He's the part of this brand new cartel, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it turns out that guy wasn't at all related to this. Although he did have a bunch of guns and hostages in his car, so I guess it's good they arrested him.
Jeez.
Yeah. Sort of a bad deal, especially since the president of Mexico has, because the other methods haven't worked, he's got the hugs, not guns, or hugs instead of bullets approach to dealing with the drug cartels.
Oh.
But
yeah, sure.
This is also, I think, last week or the week before, they arrested El Chapo's son.
Yeah, and then let him go,
and then
right?
Had to let him go, yeah. Yeah, because they were going to get wholesale slaughtered by all of the armed cartel members. Pretty embarrassing. And scary.
Yeah, sounds unpleasant. No, he's going to what I assume is like pretty much a white people resort.
All-inclusive resort. Don't do a lot of excursions, it'll be fine.
I don't think he's going to leave the compound.
Yeah.
That's the best vacation.
Yeah.
But anytime I hear compound, I just think of World War Z, so.
There's that, too. There's that aspect of it.
He's packing. And I get to take him to the airport tomorrow morning very, very early, so.
So, Drew, any housekeeping?
No, I'm just, today's been a heavy work week, so that's been a bummer. But, no, things are quiet around my household.
Excellent.
We had two back-to-back swimming pool parties from my children's classmates. Saturday and Sunday.
Mm.
And usually I'm pretty good at pouting my way out of not going to those. But the one on Sunday, my wife, she like, I don't know what she did, but she slept wrong or something, but she pinched a nerve in her neck. And it was causing her so much pain that she was like nauseous on Sunday. Or so she claims. No, I believed her because this is not the type of thing she would want me to take our children to.
Yes. Now, did you have to get dressed out and go into the pool?
No.
Oh, good for you.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I would not have. But yeah, I had to take them and yeah, that's extra stressful because it's not like they go play in the pool and then we get to go. They play in the pool and then they have to get out and then they have to change and then they have to go eat like pizza and cake or whatever. You know, so they're too old for me to like take them into the men's room and I can't go into the women's room with them. So I'm enough of a helicopter parent that freaks me out. I did not enjoy that. So, I mean, they were fine. It was just stressful for me.
I'm surprised they don't have a family area.
They have like this is at the West Pool, this particular party. Mm-hmm. And they had a changing room, but I was not the only father there with daughters. So that was, there was a line for that one.
Yep, I get it. That's actually an advantage. Journey, there was a pool party that she was invited to, but because she's got a cast on her foot, not going to happen. So it gives her an exit, too, because I'm sure she wouldn't want to go. She's not super comfortable around in the pool, although she loves it.
And, I mean, but, you know, the West Pool, I don't know if you've been there. It's pretty cool. It's the only other times we've gone to pool parties have been at the South Alaska Club, which is fine. It's not great. But the West Pool was cool because they actually close it down. It's... If you rent it for a party, it is your pool. There aren't other members of the public there.
Excellent.
So that's nice. And they've got like the fun slide, but they also have a deep end with a diving board.
Oh, cool.
Which my children had never experienced before.
And they're pretty good swimmers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They enjoy it. So yeah, they were jumping off the diving board into like the 12 foot deep water. I was just watching them thinking this will be fine. There are lifeguards. It's fine. But yeah, I mean, they're fine.
Yeah.
There are no issues there. But yeah, so pool parties. Why? Yeah, they had a blast, but it's so emotionally draining for me to stand there and not talk to other parents. Yeah, it's funny. I come back from things like these, and my wife was like, "How'd it go?" I was like, "It's fine. They had a good time." And they're like, "Were there these other parents there?" I was like, "There were a bunch of people there." And then she starts like, "Well, was this parent there? Was this parent there?" And I was like, I don't know. I don't know who these people are."
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe. Probably. She's like, "Well, who did you talk to?" And I'm like, "No one."
Yeah, I own a phone. I don't need to talk to people.
She's like, "You didn't talk to anyone?" I was like, "Nope." She's like, "Did anyone talk to you?" I'm like, "No, I don't think I really put out the vibe of, you know, come over and talk to me, please." But then she looks at me like, "Oh, how sad." I'm like, "No, it's
that's by design."
Yeah, this was by design, exactly. Yeah, I planned on this.
Mm-hmm. It's the only way I will go to these things.
Yeah,
I've gotten to the point where when I go grocery shopping now, if I have to go into the store, I now wear my headphones.
Oh, yes. I've done that for a long time, too.
So now, like, I know, but, like, people don't, I don't hear anything, like, nothing. The one time a couple weeks ago, I went without my headphones. Some guy, like, was right in front of me in one of the freezer cases, and he was clearly looking for something, and I'm like, oh, fuck. And then he looked at me, and he's like, I'm trying to find something, and I'm thinking, I don't even look like I work here. Why are you talking to me? So then I had to help.
But you put off those vibes. Like, you want to help.
No! No, I put on the vibes like I kill kittens on my garage.
No, you don't. You were very helpful vibes, I'm just saying. As evidenced by the fact that you help people.
Anyway, he's looking for hash browns.
Yeah, well.
They're with the french fries. Go away.
See? You know. You worked in the grocery industry.
No, I know because I'm a fat guy. I worked in the grocery industry. Yeah. We didn't sell groceries when I worked in the stores.
Well, that's true.
I sold a lot of records and tapes. And laser discs.
I'm sure I told you the story where Kelly and I were in Michael's. This is before Journey was born, I think. And we were looking at picture frames or something. And so they have these big, tall aisles of picture frames. And I was at one end of the aisle, and Kelly was looking at frames in the other end of the aisle. And this woman turns to me and says something. But I don't recognize it as talking to me because I don't expect anybody to be talking to me. And she's like, that lady asked you something. I'm like, what? She asked you something. Go talk to her. I'm like, what? So I look at her and I said, I'm sorry, what? She goes, something about, I thought she said, are you patronizing me? And I was like, I don't even know you. But it turns out she was asking me, what does patronize mean? Because she was reading a text. And I'm like, go away. I appreciate you think that I know this, but I'm forced to talk to you by my wife. So, yeah, anyway.
If given the choice, I wouldn't even be social.
Yeah, especially when I ask, I'm sorry, did you need something? And she's like, are you patronizing me? It's like, I don't even know you, lady. Yes. Anyway. So, you know, combination of, not paying attention, partial deafness, and inability to talk to strangers.
See, it's so funny because I can get up in front of giant crowds and give speeches, and that doesn't bother me. But like, one person in the grocery store, I want to flee.
Oh, I mean, I can do it. I just don't want to.
Yeah.
Well, there's, yeah. See, also leaving the house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow. And maybe ramble, that's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.